RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it. Beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the top.
Wow. Hey, here's Lucas and Mitchell. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
he's outreached Franklin. Retained his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Coming up on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, I am going to be joined by Daniel Galvan to preview Friday's Bellator 179, of course, headlined by a great matchup between Rory McDonald and Paul Daly. Plus, we'll let you know about some of the other MMA action that is going on. Plus, I am going to have three fighter interviews for you, as you're going to hear from Zach Bucha, who is going to be fighting for the Shamrock FC welterweight title on Saturday night in Kansas City. He's going to take on Bobby Volker. Then you're also going to hear from Darius Landa, who's going to be a part of that Shamrock FC 289 card. And our final interview is going to be with Michael Lombardo, who is an undefeated middleweight. He fights on Friday night at Titan FC 44. So all that is coming up here on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Plus, we'll get into some of the latest news and notes and fight bookings going on in MMA. But before we get into what is going on in MMA, I want to let you know about my sponsor, Fight TV. Fight, your gateway to everything fighting. MMA, wrestling, boxing, and more, live on your phone or TV. Watch MMA, wrestling, and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV, using just the Fight app. You can download the Fight app today by going to Fight, FITE.TV/RadioInfluence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/RadioInfluence/. And that link is also available on RadioInfluence.com. And coming up this weekend on Fight TV on Saturday, you'll have ACB 61, as that fight card is free right on the Fight app. Also, coming up this weekend, you do have some pro wrestling, some Muay Thai, some kickboxing events that are all taking place on Fight TV. So let the guys over there at Fight TV know that you heard about here on the MMA Report podcast on Radio Influence. But a ton of things going on in MMA. You know, typically I like to start off this show by talking about, you know, the major topics in MMA going on, get into the latest news and latest fight bookings. But going to do something a little different this week, as momentarily I'm going to bring in Daniel Galvan to help me preview Bellator 179. Of course, you know, Daniel and I typically do the preview podcast on Fridays, but with Bellator's car on Friday being a tape delay show, and actually will be live around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon side, I'm going to bring in Daniel. So momentarily you're going to hear myself and Daniel Galvan preview Bellator 179, which is a very good fight card. But, and by the way, while there is no UFC this weekend, there is a ton of MMA going on. On Thursday, you have Tachi Palace Fights 31. One of the fighters that's going to be on that card is Jalen Turner. You can head over to the MMAreport.com to watch the video interview that I did with Jalen. Jalen is coming off a 36-second win in Bellator, and so I had a chance to catch up and talk to him about his matchup on Thursday. Then on Friday, you have Fight Nights Global 65. That is an event, of course, taking over there in Russia. And one of the men that's going to be on that fight card is Jamie Pickett. I've had a chance to talk to Jamie in the past, and I did a video interview with him last week, so you head over to MMAreport.com to check that out. Also on Friday, you have M1 Challenge 75, Titan FC 44, and LFA 12. Speaking of LFA, you can head over to MMAreport.com, and you can watch the video interview I did with Chase Walden, who is going to be in the co-main event of the fight card, his first fight since losing to Gerald Merchart last year in RFA. Then on Saturday, the aforementioned ACB 61. Then you have the Bellator Monster Energy Fight Series card that's taking place in Charlotte. You know, it's a Bellator brand event, but really it's an event that Bellator is putting on in conjunction with Next Level Fight Club, as using a local promoter to help book that fight card. Also on Saturday, you have CFFC 65, Shamrock FC 289, and Invicta FC 23. So a ton of MMA action to take in this weekend. While there's not any UFC events, you do have plenty of events. A Bellator card on Friday night, which of course is a tape delay show. I mean, if you know, Friday night, you can watch a lot of MMA between the tape delay, the Bellator show, Titan FC on Fight Pass, and also LFA on Access TV. So, so much MMA to get into. But right now, let's bring in Daniel Galvan. Daniel, how's it going, man?
Jason, it is a week without the UFC, but we still have plenty of mixed martial arts to talk about. So my appetite is completely and totally ready for the meal that we will get when it comes to Bellator 179. Was that a weird answer?
No, question? It was not. It's like every regional promoter got the memo. There's not a UFC fight card this weekend, because as I look down, on Thursday we have Tachi Palace Fights 31. On Friday we have Fight Night Global 65, M1 Challenge 77, Titan FC 44, LFA 12. And then on Saturday it's ACB 61, the Bellator Monster Energy Fight Series, CFFC 65, Shamrock FC 289, and Invicta FC 23. And those are just some of the notable organizations. There's obviously a ton more MMA going on, but there's a ton of MMA going on. This Bellator card on Friday night, in London, tape delayed here in the United States on Friday night, which is unfortunate because it is really a pretty solid fight card. Yes, it did lose Michael Page versus Derek Anderson, but three solid fights on Friday's Bellator 179.
Yeah, three good fights. The other two, really everything else in the card, pretty forgettable. But man, the main event itself, Rory McDonald versus Paul Daly, is just a masterpiece. Leo McGarry, Lennon Vassell is one that really piques my interest. And then, Chuck Congo and Augusta Sakai is not a fight, Jason, I'll tell you, I had like circled on my calendar. But looking back at what Chuck Congo has done recently, just winning fight after fight, even if they may not be the most exciting thing in the world, these fights matter. And when you look back at some of these Bellator cards we've had recently, the fact that you can say that about three fights is kind of an accomplishment. And it's really the first tape delay card where I think we'll have a real, demand to see this one live, because really Daly Roy McDonald is one of the top fights this promotion can really put on at this point.
And it's even on it's a 1 hour tape delay in the UK. So even if you're in the United Kingdom, you can't sit in front of your television set and watch these fights live, which is unfortunate, because I know we haven't officially started summer. That's obviously here at the end of the month. But if you're going to include this fight card as a part of the summer fights that are happening, McDonald Daly is one of the best fights.
Yeah, there's a real big chance Paul Daly, Rory McDonald will be a great fight. I mean, the one person that could make it not so great would probably be Rory, just because he will show so much respect for the explosive nature and the dynamite in Paul Daly's hands and knees. Like, that is the one scenario where I would anticipate maybe not the best fight in the world. If Rory keeps a big distance on the stand-up or just looks to wrestle, which is possible, but otherwise, that looks to be just incredibly exciting. And also, it's intriguing in terms of where these guys stack up in the division. I mean, Rory McDonald, for years now, has really been a top five welterweight in the world year after year after year, but he's dropped two in a row against some of the best southpaw strikers on the planet in Robbie Lawler, Stephen Thompson, and he's facing a fighter in Paul Daly, who I think we both would agree maybe isn't on the same tier of welterweights that Rory is. I think Rory is on that elite tier, where Paul Daly is right below it. But the thing is, Jason, Paul Daly has the tool set to even the playing field. His stand-up is so dangerous, where he really lives up to the idea every second is an opportunity to finish the fight. So that's why this one is compelling. Even though we can both say that Rory McDonald is technically a better fighter than Paul Daly, Paul Daly's striking arsenal levels this one, where it's incredibly exciting and anything can happen.
Last week on the conference call, and I played this comment on the MMA Report podcast last week, where Rory McDonald, to me, essentially put his game plan out there, calling this, hey, I'm a complete mixed martial artist, which I took as, I'm taking Paul to the ground, I'm going to beat him up on the ground. And I don't know how many fighters truly want to sit there and have a stand-up, striking contest with Paul Daly, because that obviously is Paul's strength here. But the crazy thing about Rory McDonald, the last time Rory got a win was October 4th, 2014. Just kind of put that in a little perspective. We're now approaching UFC Fight Night 110 on June the 10th, or 112 come up here at the end of the month. That was UFC Fight Night 54.
Wow, it's amazing, man. back then, Tarek Saffiedine was just a young boy when he lost to Rory McDonald. That is such a long period of time in between wins. It's not the worst thing in the world when the only two fights you had were losses and they were to welterweight champion and then Stephen Thompson. Like, Robbie Lawler and Stephen Thompson are not the worst guys to lose to, but if you just haven't had your hand raised in the cage for years, that's probably going to drive a person nuts. And I know we're going to expect Rory to wrestle Paul Daly down to the ground. When you see Brandon Ward come into that previous fight with Daly and score a takedown, you got to think you can do the same thing if you're Rory McDonald. But if you just look back at Rory's last fight against Stephen Thompson, the wrestling component wasn't really there. The commentators were calling for it in every single round, and there were a few takedown attempts, a few clinch exchanges, but in a matchup where Stephen Thompson clearly was getting the better on the feet, and it was just like a speed discrepancy, Rory didn't really go to the wrestling base as much as I think people were thinking headed into that one. So I wonder if that informs McDonald's game plan against Paul Daly. If he's going to realize that it is probably worth going for the wrestling, or if he does think if you go for that takedown and you shoot in and you make it obvious, Daly has the ability to just knock you out with the knee coming in.
And something to remember about Rory McDonald is he does have a win against the current UFC welterweight champion, Tyron Woodley. But I think because of those last fights, and particularly the fight against Robbie Lawler, you do wonder if the guy that walked into the cage back at UFC 189 on July 11, 2015, will we ever see that guy? How much of that war with Robbie Lawler took so much out of him now? And Paul Daly and... a very smart move by Paul Daly, potentially. Maybe it was a dumb move. We'll have to see how this fight ultimately plays out. But, saying that Rory McDonald quit in that fight. I don't know if you want to give Rory McDonald bulletin board material. Maybe you don't. Maybe it's a good, maybe it's a bad thing. I still like Rory McDonald to win this fight. It's just because he has more ways to win this fight.
And I could even see a scenario where this one plays out on the feet in every round, and Rory would still be able to outpoint Paul Daly. That's not the best idea. You don't want to go where Daly is at his best, where, again, every single minute is an opportunity for Daly to knock you out, even if he's lost the round. But McDonald does have the type of stand-up with his jab, with his straight punches and kicks and length and spacing where I could actually see him outstriking Daly. But he's well-rounded. He has the wrestling arsenal to eliminate Paul Daly. Rory McDonald is not the same fighter. That's simply due to the fact that his nose looks completely different now, Jason. It looks like the worst Play-Doh that my 4-year-old cousin has put together. So he is a different fighter, but he's still, I think, 27 years old. And one note I wanted to mention, it's not like it's relevant or anything, but what's kind of cool, I think, if you're Bellator, is you have really successful UFC cast-offs in this main event. When you look back at both these guys when they exited the UFC, they each lost fights, but they lost fights where the winner would get a welterweight title shot. Paul Daly's last UFC fight was against Josh Koscheck, and the winner of that one, that was a title eliminator, and obviously Rory versus Thompson, the winner of that fight, would have got a welterweight championship match. So at least if you're Bellator, when you're signing these UFC guys, these are really relevant UFC guys. It's been a very long time since Paul Daly's been in the UFC, but when push comes to shove, if you're ranking the top 15 welterweights, I think Rory's obviously in the top 5, and I think Daly might be able to squeak into the top 15. And you feel good about that if you're Bellator, if you can put that on in the main event.
I think the question you always have with Paul Daly is, can he take that next step in his career? When you look at the losses on his record, it's been when, you know, for the most part, when he's been trying to take that step up in competition, you know, obviously Douglas Lima. By the way, we should mention that the winner of this matchup will get the winner of Lima and Larkin. Of course, those two guys are going to fight there in June. But when you look up and down, when Paul has had those opportunities, even think about, back at UFC 113 when he lost to Josh Koscheck, that was, hey, the winner of this matchup is going to be next for George St. Pierre. I do wonder, can he take that next step in his career? But, I mean, look, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this one out. Paul Daly's got to keep this fight on the feet. I don't think he does. I think Rory gets the fight to the ground, and I think he scores a stoppage probably second or third round.
Yeah, I can foresee that as well. I'm going to ditto your prediction when it comes to just like a late fight finish for McDonald. I don't think Paul Daly is going to take the next step. He's already 33 years old. He's got so much in-cage experience. And when we're talking about the next step, what that means is Paul Daly going to have a sustainable skill level to win fight after fight, become a champion, and dominate the division? I don't think Paul Daly will ever get there. But he still has the tools in his backpack to win on any given night against any skill level opponent. That's what happens when you kind of have that Semtex in your hand. So while Roy McDonald is simply the pick, Paul Daly is a very, very live dog in this fight. I think the betting odds, I actually don't see them. I don't know if you have them pulled up or if they're even up. If you can,
I don't
look
think they've come out yet.
Yeah, I would assume Daly would be an underdog in this fight. And so I think Roy McDonald gets the first win, and I'm very excited because Roy McDonald is a top five welterweight in the world. I think he's going to have a lot of success in Bellator. I think in all likelihood, the biggest probability is Roy's going to come into Bellator and run, have a great run in the division, win the championship, defend the title. But the enticing thing is, if there is one division that is really, 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 really hard to do that in, it has to be welterweight. And there are so many fun challenges for McDonald that it's really going to elevate him in terms of resume. So looking forward to it. I think McDonald wins. And like you, I think it's a round two, round three type finish.
Co-main event of this fight card is also a key matchup. I don't think officially Bellator has come out and called this a title eliminator, but I'm pretty much figuring it is. Lee McGarry, the former light heavyweight champion, taking on Linton Vassell. Both these guys have pretty much been on a collision course since both of them entered Bellator, and now this fight is going to happen. Of course, Liam is coming off that win against Brett McDermott back in February in a catchweight matchup. That was his first fight since losing a title to Phil Davis in 2016. And of course, Linton Vassell is another guy that kind of has always, he's fought for the Bellator light heavyweight title, had a good showing against Emmanuel Newton back in 2014. His only other loss in Bellator has come against King Mo. He's won back-to-back fights here against Francis Carmont and Emmanuel Newton. And, you know, in terms of breaking down this fight, I think it's once again pretty simple for Linton Vassell. Don't get into a jiu-jitsu match, otherwise he's going to get submitted.
He will probably get submitted, but I could see him, you know, work from the top position at times. I get how that's like a stupid idea. That's a really bad idea for someone like Liam McGarry, who just almost is totally fine with getting taken down and is confident in his ability to lock on triangle chokes or inverted ones. But looking at Phil Davis's success against Liam McGarry, and Linton Vassell was able to utilize his own takedowns in some of his more recent victories, isn't that kind of enticing, Jason, where if you're Linton Vassell, you have this confidence in yourself that you won't actually get tapped out?
I guess the question is, how confident are you that you, just because of the length that Liam has and throwing up those legs? I mean, if I'm Linton Vassell, I'm trying to keep this fight on the feet, you know, but not fight at range, you know, because of the length that Liam does have. I just think that going down on the ground, I think you, in, you know, because obviously Linton does not have the wrestling that Phil Davis has, I think you go to the ground, you put yourself in danger.
Yeah, that's a great point. That is a great point. And I've gone back and forth. Initially, when this fight was made, I was really high on Liam McGarry. But then when you go back and look at his last three fights, there were moments of not so good in there. The Brett McDermott fight, I mean, he got rocked early against a fighter that I think found out 10 seconds before the fight that he was fighting at Bellator 173. For him to get, you know, have issues against McDermott early would made me question, but Liam came back and just ran him out. The Phil Davis fight was domination from Davis's perspective. And then the Tito Ortiz bout, I mean, Tito had some nice moments. He was able to put Liam on his back. So there have been more moments of weaknesses in Liam's last three fights. And I think you got out of Vassell. I think he had a pretty convincing win over Carmon and a solid win in a rematch against Emmanuel Newton. Obviously, Muhammad Lawal beat him. But Vassell's given me more confidence that he can sustain a win. But you never feel good picking against a fighter like Liam McGarry, who has explosiveness on the feet, but more importantly on the ground, is just so flexible at a weight class where you don't really think about guys having grappling and submission offensive games like that. So I'm going to Lyndon Vassell, Jason. I'm sure Bellator wants Leon McGarry to win. To me, he's more marketable and more exciting. Who do you think is going to win?
I got Leon McGarry. I think this goes all 15 minutes. I think it's a pretty back-and-forth fight, but I think he takes two of the three rounds.
Yeah, I could see that as well. I think Vassell, I actually think he's going to use his wrestling here at times, but again, that could be a very bad idea.
Yeah, it could be a very bad idea. Also, a fight we also mentioned, Chet Congo, Augusto Sakai. To me, this is also a very easy fight to break down. If you're Augusto Sakai, you got to keep your back off the fence because that's what Chet Congo wants to do. Chet has not been the most exciting of fighters in his past couple of fights, but if you're Augusto Sakai, you have to sit there and stay away from the fence. And by the way, the last time Chet Congo won by stoppage, LeVar Johnson, Bellator 123, September 5th, 2014.
I don't know if you have this like in a stat sheet. Do you know if Chet Congo has spent the most time in the Bellator cage out of any fighter?
He has not. Okay. That is actually, I can pull it up right because I have it right here on my computer. I'm pretty sure that is Pat Curran.
He's been in a lot of 25-minute fights.
Yeah, a lot of 25-minute fights. I know Shelmenko's up there as well. Yeah, Pat Curran's got 4 hours, 4 minutes, and 39 seconds. Chet Congo's got over 2 hours of cage time. But when you look at your top five, it's Pat Curran, Patricio Pitbull, Joe Warren, Daniel Strauss, Alexander Shelmenko.
Those champions are cheating because if he had an opportunity to go five rounds, I know Chet Congo would, but he's been in so many decisions. I think we're going to see another one here. This is put up or shut up for 25-year-old Augusto Sakai. I think he's probably going to shut up, though. I don't see him doing anything different than what all Ole Thompson or Tony Johnson were able to do. I don't know how he could go about defending Congo's clinch game, his wrestling game, his top position. I don't know what he has in his toolbox that these guys didn't. Augusto Sakai came into Bellator prior to his first fight with a lot of hype, but since then, it's really been deflated. And the one thing you always have to mention every time we see Congo fight is he's getting very old. And you never know when older fighters kind of turn into a pumpkin. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he wins, but big opportunity for Augusto Sakai to really regain the momentum he had heading into his Bellator career.
And Chet Congo turns 42 this week.
Wow, that's I forgot he was that young. I'm sorry.
I mean, I think if you're Bellator and you know you don't there's maybe a year or two left in Chet Congo's career, most likely based on his age, you got to think that. You know, maybe the ideal scenario is Augusto Sakai winning this one just because he's a younger guy. And as I said, Chuck has not put up, you know, fights that have entertained the fans.
Yeah, that's definitely your ideal scenario is Augusto Sakai winning. There are so many principles to why. It's and he laid them out perfectly. Congo isn't excited and he's old. And I would assume the contract is a decent one for him given his resume for the UFC. So, yeah, you got to hope for Augusto Sakai. If you're the promoter, you want a guy who you can build your company around, your division around for the next 5 years. Simply put, though, Augusto Sakai, in all likelihood, is not that guy.
Are you at all intrigued by Baby Slice?
No, I'm not, Jason. Are you intrigued by Ken Ferguson Jr.?
I'm not. You know, I understand why Bellator signed him. I totally understand it. And this was, they were talking to him, you know, prior to his father passing away. But, you know, this will be interesting. The fact that this is now a TV fight, his first fight, his pro debut, which he lost, was on, you know, Bellator.com. I'm interested to see if they, you know, if he can beat DJ Griffin, can he become any kind of draw for Bellator? And I just, you know, I mean, you know, it's not like there's, you know, Kimbo Slice is just walking all, you know, all across the television set at this point. You know, Kimbo was a very unique person, had ability to bring a different type of person to the television set. But I just don't know if there, how much interest there is out there for Baby Slice.
I don't think there's much, and it's going to be him making his own name if people are going to care. people are going to care about Baby Slice if he comes out here and he knocks people out first round after first round. And that's just likely not going to happen. Who knows? I don't want to discount the kid, but it's all on his own to make it. I mean, there is a long, 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 long line of famous athletes' sons just not living up to potential. And we've seen it even in mixed martial arts. I mean, the one guy who's really been amazing has to be, AJ McKee is an obvious one. And even Ryan Couture really had a solid career, I would say. But for Baby Slice, I think it's not very likely, but you never know.
And, of course, this will be a five-fight main card coming up on Friday. Bellator 179. You can watch it live on – or, excuse me, not live on Spike. Live, I guess, live to tape, as we would call it in the industry, live to tape, Bellator 179. Daniel, we'll talk again next week as we've got the UFC swing card, which is a little bit – there's some good matchups on that card.
Listen, Jason, I will type myself into any mixed martial arts card if you give me enough time.
It is a early Sunday afternoon card. I like those.
Yeah, it gives you enough time to go out clubbing.
And Daniel is spot on. Yeah, a Sunday afternoon card will give you enough time to go out to clubbing or to the bars or doing a little Saturday for the boys, whatever you might want to do on your Saturday evening. I'm not really the club person anymore, and probably the fact that I'm 35 years old, don't really go to club anymore. But I guess also the fact that I worked in a club for doing radio promotions for about a decade, kind of not really the club thing is not even my thing. Even if I'm out on the road, if I'm gonna go out on a Saturday night, I'm gonna go out with the boys, have a few cocktails, get in the Uber, whatnot. But actually, that's what we'll be doing this weekend. My buddy's got a birthday, so going out to celebrate his birthday. But do appreciate Daniel coming on the podcast this week to talk about Bellator 179. As we mentioned, a ton of MMA going on this weekend that you can check out. I mentioned some of those fight cards earlier in the show, but a couple of fight cards that definitely have me interested. I am interested in that Titan card, particularly in the main event. You know, Jose Shorty Torres going up to 135, looking to become a two-weight division champion there. Of course, we had him on the podcast last week, and you have to imagine if Shorty Torres gets the win there, I think his next fight would be in the UFC. And, of course, that LFA card on Friday night on Access TV, looking forward to seeing how that one plays out there. Also, I would note the CFFC 65 card, Tanner Saraceno, who I've had on the podcast previously. He's headlining that fight card. That is definitely a matchup that I am interested in to see how that does play out this weekend. But as I said, a ton of MMA to get into. But right now, I do want to get into some of the latest news and notes going on in mixed martial arts, as a lot of things have happened since I recorded this podcast last week. On Tuesday, the California State Athletic Commission, they made some news. They had their monthly meeting, and the big part of this monthly meeting was about weight cutting. But before I bring up what happened with the weight cutting, I want to mention about Josh Thompson was a part of the agenda as well. He was filing an appeal to get his loss against Patricky Pitbull back earlier this year, back in February, overturned to a no contest due to the headbutt. However, his appeal was unanimously denied, so that will stand as a win for Patricky Pitbull. But the other major news that came out of that meeting was the 10-point plan that Andy Foster had come up with in terms of changing weight cutting and how everything goes in MMA. And, look, flat out, it's a game changer. This is a game changer in MMA, and it should be noted that the first major event that these new regulations will be in place for will be UFC 214 on July the 29th. Of course, it was announced last Friday in Dallas that Daniel Cormier versus John Jones 2 will headline that fight card. So something to interesting note there. First off, when it comes to, what is going on, the major point of this is basically the maximum recommended normal walking around weight, which is 10% more. Now, for flyweight, that would be 137.5 pounds. For bantamweight, 148.5 pounds. Featherweight, 159.5. Lightweight, 170.5. Welterweight, 187 pounds. Middleweight, 203.5 pounds. Light heavyweight, 225.5 pounds. And heavyweight, 291.5 pounds. Now, when it comes to the female weight classes for straw weight, the maximum recommended normal walking weight, 126.5 pounds for 125. That'd be 137.5 for 135. That'd be 148.5 pounds for 150, 165 pounds, and for 175 pounds would be 192.5 pounds. Now you do wonder how this is going to affect what's going on, you know, in say an organization like the UFC and Bellator, but this is a game changer. I know that a lot of people are behind this. I believe that this 10-point plan that Andy Foster has put together will be a key talking point at the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports meeting in July. I think it's going to be a huge point of emphasis. I am planning to go up to Mohegan, where the commission meeting is going to be held this year. It's going to be in late July. Looking to, I think I'm going to be recording about three different podcasts up there. One of the podcasts that I'm looking to try to do, one will be a referees roundtable where I'll get a couple of referees to talk about, you know, some of the various instances. I'm sure the Dustin Poirier, Eddie Alvarez situation will come up. The Chris Weidman, Gegard Mousasi situation will definitely come up. I think also I'd probably ask them all about, you know, being in a state that has adopted the new rules as opposed to a state that hasn't adopted the new rules and how that affects, you know, a referee doing their job. Also, definitely going to have a executive director's roundtable. I've already got one executive director locked in, and I'm looking at about three or four executive directors have a roundtable. Just talking about some of the regulatory side of things, and then also plan to do a show with representatives of the MMA Rules and Regulations Committee that is a committee that, you know, does make these recommendations. This is a huge groundbreaking news of what the California State Athletic Commission did do. A 10-point plan. If you want to read that 10-point plan, you can go over to MMAfighting.com as they have the PDF of exactly what this is. But really, the big part of this is about the walking around weight, which I think for a lot of fighters, you know, I think that is going to be an issue. I think that there's a lot of fighters who cut a massive amount of weight, and this is what what commissions want to get rid of. They want to get rid of extreme weight cutting, and I think this is a step in the right direction. It is something that definitely has to happen in MMA. Also, some other news and notes. Dana White last week said we are not going to see Michael Bisping versus George St. Pierre next, or they do not want to sit around and wait for that matchup. So Yoel Romero is next for Michael Bisping. Timetable for that fight right now is undetermined. Cody Garbrandt went to Germany late last week to have a back procedure. While the UFC is not coming out either way, it does sound like July 8th, that fight is in jeopardy of not happening. That was a fight that was targeted to be the main event of UFC 213. So we'll see if that fight happens July 8th or is it gets postponed. My guess is it likely gets postponed. TJ Dillashaw has mentioned about being interested in fighting Demetrius Johnson for the flyweight title. So we'll see what happens there. Also late last week, the UFC announced that they're heading back to Mexico City on August 5th for a fight night card on FS1. Be interesting to see who ultimately headlines that fight card. You know, obviously maybe Yair Rodriguez, depending on how he recovers from just a brutal defeat. Got dominated for two rounds there by Frankie Edgar. So we'll see if he headlined it. You know, I would think maybe someone like Diego Sanchez would be on that card. So we'll see what happens there for the UFC fight night card on Mexico City on August the 5th. And one other news item I want to mention before I get into the latest fight bookings is about Jessica Penne, as it was announced late last week by USADA that she is the first UFC athlete flagged for a potential doping violation following a biological passport review. Now, I think a lot of people probably do not know what this means, and this is what that has to do with. Now, this stems from an out-of-competition sample collected on March the 20th. Now, there is no certain substance that is announced with this, but what happens is a biological passport detected over time can trigger additional screening, such as a carbon isotope ratio test, to determine the presence of a synthetic substance in the body, even at low levels, or if the substance itself can't be directed identically. Now, in terms of this, I think this is something we're probably going to hear more of down the road as USADA, you know, has, you know, 5 to 10 to 15 samples on fighters, but Jessica Penne now becomes the first one. So obviously she'll have to deal with that. I have not seen Jessica Penne release any statement on that situation. And I think that's kind of, in a way, I think it's good and bad. I think that, you know, it's good part is your words can't be used against you. But then I think the bad part is if you stay silent, people are going to kind of wonder exactly what's going on there. So it's, you know, you'd almost rather see her maybe come up with just a general statement. But I haven't seen anything at this time of Jessica Penne, whether she has said anything. Now, in terms of fight bookings that have been booked by the UFC, there's a ton of fight bookings that have been announced. A lot of them were announced last Friday. Of course, Cormier and Jones was announced. Also, Duho Choi, Andre Feely at UFC 214. Man, love that fight between those two guys. And Danny White did confirm that Cormier Jones is the main event. UFC 213, Amanda Nunes, Valentina Shevchenko. That'll be a rematch. Right now, it's not announced as the main event, but you know, if Dillashaw and Garbrandt does not happen on that fight card, that is likely the main event of that fight card. Of course, those two ladies had to be separated during the stare down when Amanda Nunes claims during the stare down that, you know, Shevchenko touched her first with her fist on her face, and then Nunes fired back. So we'll see if that ultimately is there, and then, of course, that'll be a rematch for the bantamweight title. There also was announced that Justin Gaethje will make his UFC debut the night before UFC 213. He's going to take on Michael Johnson, the main event of the Ultimate Fighter 25 finale. That's a fight that has absolute fireworks on it. And I'll say this, I am much more excited to watch Justin Gaethje, Michael Johnson, than I am to watch Amanda Nunes, Valentina Shevchenko. That's not saying Nunes Shevchenko won't be a good fight. What I'm saying is I'm just more interested to watch Justin Gaethje versus Michael Johnson. That should be a hell of a fight. Also, last Friday, the UFC announced the main event of UFC Fight Night Glasgow on July the 16th will be Gunnar Nelson versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. I saw a lot of people kind of down this matchup, but we'll see maybe if Santiago can take that next step in his career. Also, a 115-pound fight was announced for that matchup, Joanne Calderwood versus Cynthia Calvillo. Now, the interesting part of that is that Joanne Calderwood, at that press conference, said that the day after she signed on for this fight, agreed to it, everything, the next day the UFC announced that they were doing 125 pounds. And obviously, she's going to be a part of that division. You know, everyone knows how tough it is for her to get down to 115 pounds. So she'll obviously be a part of that 125 pound division, which is going to kick off with the Ultimate Fighter 26. And you have to imagine that whoever walks out of that season as the UFC champion, that Joanne Calderwood, you know, potentially could be their first title defense. Who knows? Maybe we get in a situation like what we saw at 115 pounds, where Carlos Barza ended up winning that season, became the champion, and then, of course, lost to Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Also, when it comes to other fight books that were announced on that last Friday at that press conference, Chris Weidman's going to headline UFC on Fox 25 on July 22nd. He's going to take on Kelvin Gastelum. Also, Jimmy Rivera versus Thomas Almeida was announced for that fight card. That is a hell of a bantamweight matchup. How are you not excited for, you know, Rivera and Almeida? But I'll tell you, on Weidman and Gastelum, that was a little bit of an odd fight booking for me. That was a fight booking that it just didn't make sense. I thought that you would see maybe the UFC try to rebuild the Chris Weidman brand a little bit, but man, they are not giving him a tune-up fight or a showcase fight, however you want to describe it. I mean, they are putting him in there against a top guy, and it's a big matchup there for Kelvin Gastelum at 185 pounds. Some other matchups that have been announced by the UFC over the past couple of days, Ben Wynn now has a new opponent for UFC Fight Night 110 on June the 10th, as Joseph Benavidez announced via his Instagram that he had to pull out of the fight due to a torn ACL. So send the healing vibes to Joseph Benavidez. And right when Benavidez announced that he was out, Tim Elliott goes on social media and says, "Sign me up. I want to go." And within 2 hours, it was signed, sealed, and delivered. Tim Elliott stepping up on short notice to take on Ben Wynn on June the 10th there in New Zealand. Of course, that's a fight card headline by Derek Lewis and Mark Hunt, which is a huge matchup for Derek Lewis. Who knows? If Derek Lewis goes out there and has a dominating victory Maybe he is next for Stipe Miocic, but you know, of course, we'll see what happens there. You know, you look at Francis Ngannou. What's the health of Cain Velasquez? What happens with Verdum and Overeem? So you know, really not a clear number one contender right now there in the UFC heavyweight division. Now, a week before that card in New Zealand will be UFC 212, and it was announced late last week that Brian Kelleher has signed with the UFC. He is going to take on Yuri Alcantara. Now, Brian Kelleher is a guy that I was honestly a little surprised that he did not get in the UFC earlier this year, and particularly when Andrei Sukuthaw got in the UFC, because he has a win over Andrei Sukuthaw. He has been on a roll. Also has a win over Mark Cherico, who we've had here on the podcast. And he actually had signed a multi-fight deal with ACB earlier this year. Was initially slated to make his AC debut back in January. However, his opponent had visa issues. And then he was scheduled to fight in March at ACB 54. That did not happen. And ACB has exclusive contracts. And, you know, for instance, Tanner Boser, who's on Saturday's ACB show, he's on a three-fight deal with ACB. He's now on his second fight of the three fights. And one of the things you'll know about ACB is they're paying really well, but they did let Brian Kelleher out of that fight. Now he's going to take on Yuri Alcantara, and should be interesting to see how well he does there at 135 pounds. That is a nice little matchup there at UFC 212. So that are, and also, by the way, UFC Fight Night Oklahoma City, that's the card on Sunday, June the 25th. Two matchups added to that fight card: Devin Powell versus Daryl Horcher and Tim Means versus Alex Garcia. Now, one other news story I want to mention before I get into the other interviews I have here on the podcast was a story that was posted on Tuesday on BloodyElbow.com. Great reporting by Paul Giff. The headline of the story was, quote, "Most of sold out WSOF NYC tickets were comp." Now, give you a little a backstory on this was about a week or two after this event, I had reached out to the New York State Athletic Commission and asked if the report was available on tickets sold versus tickets comp for WSOF NYC, which was on December 31st at the theater at Madison Square Garden. You know, Carlos Silva had mentioned it was a sold-out crowd. They had nearly 5,000 people. And when I asked the commission, the response I got back to me was, well, you have to ask the promotion about that, which was a little bit of an odd response. You know, sometimes, you know, commissions will say, look, that's private record. We can't give that information out. If the promotion wants to give that information out, that's on them. And honestly, when the New York commission said, ask WSOF what the tickets, you know, sold versus comped were, that was my mindset. Look, you know, whatever that number is, they're likely not going to tell you. But this was a story by Paul Giff that, and he got this when he put in a public records request with the New York Department of Taxation and Finance to find out what it is. Kudos to Paul Giff for going that far to get the tax return. But according to the WS tax return for this event, nearly two-thirds of the tickets were comp. 66% of the tickets, 2,899 tickets, saying that they sold 1,658 tickets that generated a little over $111,000 in gross ticket revenues. In all, 4,557 tickets were issued in total, which gets you right there up to the 5,000. And in the story, he even has the document that labels everything out, you know, how their MMA WC LLC doing business as World Series of Fighting, and the promoter's email address is on there, the phone number of the promotion, everything is on there, and great reporting by Paul Giff there. And, you know, it's interesting information. No, I know there's probably some fans out there that are going to say, oh, that's a reporter trying to bring out a negative side in terms of the World Series of Fighting. But, you know, I think really it just kind of shows you what the MMA industry is currently. You know, I was having a conversation with someone over the weekend, after the UFC pay-per-view about people that come out to sports bars in 2017, and in comparison to previous years, where they said, you know, look, not as many people are coming out to watch the UFC pay-per-views in the past, and I truly think that it's more of a situation of the UFC is struggling in getting that casual sports fan interested in their product, and I think that the hardcore fight fan, you know, they sit at home and they watch these events. That's what I do. I went out for the UFC 210 pay-per-view, but I couldn't tell you the last pay-per-view I went out before that. I mean, a lot of the times it's just either, you know, me watching at the house and the boys come over, or I go over to one of my buddy's house and watch the fight, and that's what we did, you know. And I definitely, when you talk to a lot of people in the industry, a lot of people wonder kind of, you know, is this sport, you know, how much is it growing on a yearly basis? And obviously it's not the boom period of, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010. You kind of do wonder where the sport's heading, but it's good information to kind of see, you know, what World Series of Fight has done there. I mean, look, as I've always said, I want to see the World Series of Fighting succeed. World Series of Fighting succeeding is great for the sport. It's great for the fighters. Give fighters another place to go and earn a living. You know, it'd be interesting to see what happens with the Pro Fighters League and the $1 million payout that they're putting out there. I mean, look, I'm sure there are going to be a lot of interested fighters that are going to be interested in what they're doing. But, you know, as I said, it'd be interesting to see how they develop that roster. To me, that's one of the most interesting thing about what's going on with the World Series of Fighting is how can they develop that roster? You know, obviously you're going to have, you know, you're going to get those guys that are the prospects that are coming up. You're going to get those guys that are aging veterans, but can you get big name fighters to come into an organization? I think that's got to be the clear question with that. Also, wanted to know what I mentioned in terms of articles that Bellator probably doesn't like, or I should say headlines Bellator does not like out there. And this comes from MMAfighting.com. Rory McDonald was on the MMA Hour with Errol Hawani, and the headline is Rory McDonald making less sponsorship money in Bellator than in the UFC. Now, if you read the article, what Rory McDonald is saying is the fact of he's looking to build long-term relationships with big-name sponsors. He just doesn't want to, you know, basically, you know, put on a bunch of logos on a fight banner and shorts to make money. He's looking for those long-term. But in terms of a headline, probably not the headline that Bellator wants out there, especially the fact that Benson Henderson has talked about, you know, kind of his views on sponsorship right now. And not exactly the headline Bellator wants out there. But, of course, earlier in the podcast, we did have Daniel Galvan on. And interested to see how Rory McDonald does in his Bellator debut. Now, coming up on Saturday is Shamrock FC 289, and our next guest who is joining us now is going to be in the main event of that fight card, as he is going to be taking on Bobby Volker for the vacant Shamrock FC welterweight title. That is Zach Boucher. We've had Zach on the podcast in the past. Zach, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Of course, you returned to 170 pounds in your last matchup after having a couple of fights there at 155 pounds, but I guess I'll start off with this: is how is fight night different for you in fighting at 170 pounds as opposed to 155 pounds?
It's fight night feels similar, but it's just like when I get in there, I think it's mostly different at 55 and 70. I can just tell that my body's been through a lot more stress and trauma than it's going to 170, where I feel a lot more comfortable. So, I mean, it doesn't really feel that much different leading up. But again, once you get in there, once you start moving, just like things don't move the same way they do. Like when I was going down to 55, I just felt a lot more depleted.
And of course, you got that win back in December at Shamrock FC 280 against Adam Meredith. Stoppage win there in the first round. How do you assess your performance in that fight?
I was good. Maybe like sometimes I'm a little bit of a slow starter. Maybe it was a little bit too slow of a start, but I was really calm. I was really collected, really comfortable. Like he got the takedown. I didn't fight it hard enough, really, and he got position. He got my back and stuff like that, but at no point did I really feel threatened. People were talking about how he's a purple belt a lot, but I'm a purple belt too, and I really didn't feel like I was in any real danger. He just got a good position in the beginning. I just stayed calm, waited for my moment, then I got on top and then turned the tides on him.
You mentioned about being a slow starter. How do you make sure that you don't start slow against Bobby?
It depends. Like, if I go in that with that mentality to get on it right away, then but I've definitely had plenty of fights where I just got right on it.
And obviously, Bobby is a veteran of the sport. He's been around for a long time. Would you call this – is Bobby the biggest name that you have fought to this career, or do you think that Pele would be a bigger name?
I mean, it depends on how you look at it, because, like, I mean, Pele was more of, like, an old-school legend. But, like, Pele being a legend, I would still put Pele above that – above Bobby and, like – you know, in that legendary status, guy that's been around for a long time, pioneers of the sport kind of thing. But definitely Bobby's up there too.
How is fighting Bobby different than, saying, fighting Meredith or even Pele? I mean, are they similar type of fights?
Well, all three of them are very different fighters. You know, they fight different. I would actually say that Pele and Volker are more similar than Meredith. It's just stylistically very different, really, more than anything. Also too, just experience-wise, you know, like, you guys have more of a wealth of experience. Like, going up against Meredith, I knew I could rely on my experience too, just as a veteran myself. Like, I knew that my experience would pull through for me. And it's not too often I take a fight where somebody has more fights than I do, but in this case, I do with Bobby.
In terms of breaking down this fight, in terms of how much of a feeling out process do you think there will be with it, this being a title fight?
Probably not too much. I think we're going to get on it pretty quick. I could see us moving around, but it depends on the moment, you know. I honestly kind of believe we're just going to get to it, and that pace is, if we start full bore right away, it's going to keep that pace until it's finished.
If you were going to, you know, tell the fans what they can expect in this fight, is it safe to say that this is probably going to feat that, whether it goes 1 minute or 25 minutes, that it's going to play out on the feet?
Mostly I would say so. Not necessarily the whole thing. I think there's going to be a lot of, there's going to be a lot of scrapping going on. A lot of it's going to be on the feet, but I think even the ground stuff, there's not going to be any laying around on one another and just stuffing the other person's, game. There's going to be a lot of activity. There's going to be a lot of strikes. There's going to be a lot of punishment, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. So regardless, it's not going to be one of those just boring lay on you kind of fights. It's going to be intense no matter where it is.
I would think that there's probably going to be a good amount of people that look at you as the underdog in this fight. Do you like that role?
Yeah, I don't mind it at all. I think it's great. It's not that the pressure changes anything too much for me, but I mean, it just kind of frees me up to just do my thing. You know, there's no pressure on me. I'm just going to go out there and win.
In terms of being that underdog, do you view that as people are underestimating you and your abilities?
I don't know. It's just, I mean, Bobby's been up there with some major dudes up in the UFC and stuff like that. So I think a lot of people just naturally assume that means I'm the underdog, and that's okay. You know, I'm not too worried about that.
As you prepare for this fight, do you see a different Bobby today as opposed to the Bobby we saw in the UFC?
I don't know. I think he just Bobby's Bobby. I think he kind of keeps that same, just trudging forward, heavy on that lead leg. He's a power puncher. He's in there to scrap. That's just what he does. It's what he loves to do. So I think in that respect, he's pretty much the same. I think he's working with a few coaches to refine some stuff. I mean, we're all always trying to constantly grow, so I'm going to be ready for anything. But I think other than that, he's just that scrapper that just wants to get in there and throw down.
I understand that. There's always, you know, little minor tweaks that you make, camp in and camp out. Did you make any minor tweaks for this one?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Always. And every single one's different. You know, you're going to modify your game a little bit for the person you're fighting, but also just in general, just always trying to be better.
How much cross training do you do in terms of going to multiple gyms?
I do, but not a crazy amount. I have a good group of people around me, my gym here in Lawrence, Kansas, and then also Midwest Combat Academy. My guys at Rivers Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, they're the guys that I pretty much cycle through those guys as much as possible. I have some really elite-level strikers to work with. I have some great wrestlers I've been working with, and just the guys that are around me a lot of the time that I still work with.
What's the MMA scene like in Kansas?
It's great. It's cool. It's different than when I was out in California. It's a lot more condensed over there. But here, it's pretty awesome. The MMA scene in Lawrence, Kansas is new, not so much in Topeka. Like, we have our gym in Topeka, Midwest Combat Academy, which is basically our brother school. So they've been around for a long time. That's good stuff. There's a lot of stuff in Kansas City. It's pretty cool here.
So when you're in the middle of training camp and you go home at night and you're just kind of looking to decompress, what do? Is there a television show you tune on to or something like that?
When I get home at night, it's usually pretty late, and I've been training most of the day. So a lot of times I'm just hanging out with my girlfriend and eating some food, and then I'll just kind of space off and read or pass out just outright.
Now, I know some guys have a routine. Once they make weight of something, they go eat. Do you have that same type of routine?
Nothing in particular. I just make sure that I'm getting, carving back up and hydration is number one, and just don't eat anything too crappy. Just make sure that I'm eating healthy, getting plenty of carbohydrates, replenishing, making sure that I'm hydrated and all that stuff. So nothing, no one thing in particular.
I fully understand that your mind is on the prize with getting the win over Bobby here, but have you started to think about what else you want to accomplish in MMA in 2017?
Yeah. I mean, this could be a lead into a lot of big things. There's some stuff on the line with Bellator that's involved with this receiving this belt. But who knows, it could open up all kinds of opportunities, because I feel like this is such a good matchup that I feel like it's going to bring a lot of attention, and I'm just going to see what happens after this.
And you're going to be able to see Zach take on Bobby Volker in the main event of Shamrock FC 289. And Zach, I really do appreciate you coming on the podcast. Of course, everyone can, if you're not in the Kansas City area, you can watch that event on ShamrockFightingChampionships.com. Speaking of Shamrock FC 289, you'll be able to head over to the MMAReport.com before this event on Saturday, as I'm going to have two interviews up there of two guys that are going to be fighting on that fight card. I have an interview with Kurt Gringleton and Anthony Garrett, so look out for those later on this week on the MMAReport.com. Of course, I talked to Bobby Volker last week here on the podcast, and obviously the winner of this matchup put themselves in line for a 3-fight Bellator contract if that is what they want. I mean, there's no obligation for them to take that Bellator contract, but it will be sitting there, which, I think one of the interesting things about that aspect is we haven't seen a St. Louis show with Bellator here in 2017, so you have to wonder maybe if that is coming later on this year. And last week we had on the podcast, I mentioned about the PFL to Bobby Volker, because I thought that would be an organization that maybe he'd want to get into, but didn't feel either way of whether we kind of feel about that. But did kind of get the sense that Bobby Volker gets a win here, as next fight may be in Bellator, which would be a nice signing there by Bellator. Of course, Bellator absolutely loaded there at 170 pounds. So I appreciate Zach coming on the podcast to talk to me about his fight coming up on Saturday. Now, also a part of Shamrock FC 289 on Saturday at the Ameristar Casino in Kansas City, we'll see the pro debut of Darius Lando. Now, he was supposed to make his pro debut late last year at Victory FC 55. However, that ultimately did not take place. But we are now joined by Darius Lando, who is going to be taking on Joe Canfield. Darius, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. The pro debut finally taking place on Saturday. How are you feeling right now, knowing your pro debut is coming up here just in a couple of days?
Hey, what's up, brother? The feeling I have right now is I feel great. I feel ecstatic. I've been waiting for this for a long time now. I've been leaving it up to the man above to let me know and set everything up for me to get this journey started. I've been in the Army the last 7 and some change. And I finally got out, and things are falling into place, and I finally can commit myself 100% to my fighting career. I've been wanting to do this for the longest time, and I feel it in my body that this is the time, and this is it, and I'm going to give everything I got into this. I'm not holding back on anything.
Do you remember the moment when you realized that you wanted to be a professional fighter?
Oh, yes, yeah, I definitely do. I remember it was actually when I was back home in Hawaii, you know, I got to watch everybody grow up in their career, and I was like, I just wanted to jump in there already and start making these moves. And, you know, I had a lot of good role models and a lot of good leadership back there in the fight game and just in life in general. You know, they were like, you know, if you're going to really commit yourself to this career, you got to understand that the second you make it a pro career, you're leaving everything in there. Your record is going to, you know, dictate how far you make it. You know, you can't just think that you can just jump into this game and just start taking random fights, you know, and they were like, if you think you're ready, then take it. And I started thinking, I was like, you know what, maybe I should fine tune some things and start, you know, doing some other things in the whole fight game instead of just being one dimensional fighter. So I had took that into note and took my time with it. And now I feel like I'm more than ready. And I just can't wait, you know, to see what else is to come in this future.
There was a video that Shamrock FC had put out talking about, you know, just who you are, how you've gotten to this point. And one of the things you say goes that you said you just feel at peace in the cage. Can you kind of describe the feeling you have, you know, why you feel such at peace inside the cage?
Like I said, you know, growing up where I'm from, you know, Hawaii, Iwamanalo, just everybody, just the culture, you know, the lifestyle, just the upbringing we have. You were just naturally born warriors, you know, and the second I stepped foot in that cage, all the troubles, all the stress that I got in my life, I don't know what's going on. All I know is I got one thing to do, and that's to take the guy out in front of me. So, you know, you can go through life every day walking, you could be at work, and all you can think about is something that is stressing you out, and you're not focused on work. And this, to me, this is my job. You know, this is how I'm going to feed my kids. This is how I'm going to build a foundation for them in the long run, you know, for their future. You know what I'm saying? And the second I step foot in that cage, matter of fact, the second I find out I got a fight, everything else just tunes out. Every time I step in the gym, every time I put those gloves on, every time I put the headgear on, I put my mouthpiece in, I just everything else just drowns out. I don't know if you remember that movie Biker Boys when the guy was getting ready to race and all he remembered was saying was tunnel vision, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's all I see. I can hear exactly what I need to hear from my corner man. And other than that, everybody else drowns out. I don't hear the audience screaming. I don't hear people nitpicking, you know, talking about, oh, punch this, punch that. I can hear my corner man with all the loud noise going on. I can hear my corner man. That's all I can hear. And I can see the guy in front of me, and that's all I care about. And when I'm in there, nothing else matters but me and this one person in front of me.
You were initially supposed to make your pro debut back in December, but a car accident ultimately, you know, postpones it to now this fight. Do you all view the fight game any differently now as opposed to when you were preparing for that fight at Victory?
Oh, not at all. Honestly, to me, you know, I live life as everything happens for a reason. You know, I don't like to force things. I like things to happen on its own. So I was more than excited for that fight. More of the reason is because I left my home, Hawaii, in 2014, and I've been in the state of Kansas since then. So I haven't been home for 3, going on 4 years now. So being able to have the opportunity to fight on Victory, it was a really great opportunity for me. So I was training harder than ever, you know, and just knowing that people back home would be able to watch and support all the way back in the islands made me happy. But when I got into that car accident and the time frame of everything that has been going on in my life, I looked at that as, you know, a blessing, because there's been a lot going on. You know, people don't understand a fighter's life. You know, all they see is a person that goes into the cage, they throw down for, you know, 15, 30 minutes, and that's it. That's all they see. You know what I'm saying? They don't know what this person is going through. So I'm not a type to hide it. I just, you know, it's my life. Nobody else needs to know what's going on. So I didn't really tell a lot of people. Actually, nobody really knew about the car accident except the people that was close to me. And I just wanted to let them know I was alive and I was well. But the car accident wasn't 7 times my car flipped. And I got out the car and I got a video after the car accident. I got out the car and videotaped the car and then I videotaped myself. And I didn't have a single scratch on me. The adrenaline was pumping. The next morning, I actually did a jiu-jitsu tournament. Like, that's how healthy I felt I was. But then the adrenaline started wearing off, and then in about 3 to 4 days later, I started having massive headaches. I couldn't walk. My knees wouldn't want to bend or they'd be locked up. And I went and got checked, and they said I had, you know, minor tears in my knees. And I was like, well, I got a fight coming up. And at that time, it was about 6 weeks out. So I was like, I got more than enough time to prepare, you know. And I still kept training, letting it heal up on my own, rehabbing my own. And then I ended up babying it, I guess you could say. And I ended up injuring my rib, tearing that intercostal in my rib. So, you know, we still kept training. And then I ended up telling my coach finally and my manager, Brian Butler. And, you know, they're all like, hey, this is your first pro debut. And, you know, it's going to be live. And, this, you know, if we don't want you to go out there, you know, you got a lot more fight left in you. So we should just, you know, hold off to the next time. So I looked at it. I was like, you know, you guys are right. You guys know what's going on. You know, as a fighter, people just want to fight. They could be hurt. I could break a foot and I'll be like, it's all right. I'll just hop on one foot and fight. You know what I'm saying? So that time frame, everything happens for a reason. So now that I know I've been waiting patiently, I am more than ready to get this thing going.
You mentioned about
nothing going to stop me this time.
You mentioned about growing up in Hawaii, now being in Kansas. What's the biggest difference? Is it all a culture shock to be in Kansas as opposed to living in Hawaii?
Oh, at first, yeah, it was a major culture shock. Because growing up in Hawaii, you know, we live on an island. And, you know, you can drive around to Hawaii in about like 2 hours without traffic. But coming out here, you know, being really a minority, like being home in Hawaii, it's a melting pot. You got all types of cultures, all types of ethnicities. You know, and it's a mixed plate, I like to call it. And coming here, you know, you get to really feel the difference of the diversity. And I'm just like, I felt a little bit, I wouldn't say timid, but just a little bit uncomfortable at first. But the second I finally found a gym, you know, I found home. So that's all I was really worried about is, am I going to be able to find a place that I can call home to train, you know? And like I said, there's been a lot going on in my life in the last 3-4 years. But like I said, the fight game, the gym, that drowns out all the stresses in my life. So I found my home, and that's all I do. You know, I go to work, take care of my kids, and I train. That's my life, 24/7.
How old are your kids?
I got a 9-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 2-year-old.
Now, have you allowed any of them to come to any of your amateur fights in the past?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. My two oldest sons and my daughter, my oldest son, he's seen most of my fights. And my 6-year-old and my 4-year-old, they've seen it. And then my youngest, my 2-year-old, he hasn't seen any. He hasn't seen any yet because I haven't fought since 2014 before my deployment.
But, of course, you got this fight here taking on Joe Canfield. Is there any concerns of the skills he brings to the cage that have you concerned this fight? Or you kind of feel like, look, this is about me. It's not about him.
Yeah, you said it. You know, I give respect to everybody that I face. Everybody who steps in that cage, I respect. But at the end of the day, I'm not worried about that person. I'm not worried about me. I'm just there for one thing and one thing only, and that's just to be victorious. You know, I put a lot of hard work into this, and a lot of people, they don't know because I don't brag about it. I don't talk about it. All I tell myself is, you know, I'm going to be great one day. I'm going to leave this earth being one of the greatest, you know, and there's no reason for me to not give 100%. You know, it's not that I'm not saying that he doesn't have what it takes. It's just I don't care what he's got. Because I know what I put in, I know the hours I put in, I know the sweat and the blood and everything that I put in into not just this fight, but into this game, you know. And this is all I'm not gonna say this is all I got, but this is all I have and this is all I want to do, and I'm gonna give everything I got until my body can't take it no more. But like I said, I respect the man. I'm not worried about what he's gonna bring. All I know is that I can guarantee 100% he doesn't have enough of what it takes for the fight style I have. I'm not no longer one dimensional. You know, I used to just be wanting to kickbox. Mm-hmm. I'd want to stand there and out kickbox you. But you know, like I like to change it up now. You know, so you know it's gonna be a big surprise for a lot of people who only know me from a fight game and how I used to fight. You know, it's gonna be a nice performance. It's gonna be a nice show. But I can guarantee you that only one of us is gonna walk out there standing.
Have you visualized how the victory comes?
I visualize it all the time. Honestly, I know he's strong. I know he's in shape. I know he's tough. But I'm telling you, I got power that people don't understand. They don't see it, you know. I got a small body frame, you know. It's just, I just know that I'm ready. Anywhere he wants to go, he wants to take me down, he wants to stand and bang, it doesn't really matter to me. All I know is that I'm confident in what I got and the hard work that I've been putting in. So that day comes, only one person is leaving that thing standing. It's kill or be killed, like they say. There's no point in going in there and leaving it up to the judges.
And, of course, you're going to be able to see Darius fight here coming up on Saturday night, May the 20th, Shamrock FC 289 at the Ameristar Casino in Kansas City. Darius, is there anywhere my listeners can follow you out on social media?
Yeah. You can follow me on Instagram at DariusLando_MMA. Facebook, DariusLandoAlfafara. Snapchat, just type in my name, The Secret. With two E's for the, you know what I'm saying? And that's where you can find me at.
Darius, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and good luck on Saturday at Shamrock FC 289, which takes place at the Ameristar Casino in Kansas City. And if you're not in Kansas City, you can watch this event via internet pay-per-view on ShamrockFightingChampionships.com. But now we are going to turn our attention over to Titan FC. Their next card is on Friday night, Titan FC 44, which you can watch on UFCFightPass.com. If you happen to not be in the South Florida area, of course, headlined by Shorty Torres moving up to 135 pounds to challenge the bantamweight champion Farkhov Sharipov. Of course, we've had both those guys here on the previous two episodes of the MMA Report podcast. Also, the interim lightweight title is on the line. Jay-Z Cavalcante taking on Kurt Hallbutt. But that fight card's also going to feature our next guest, who's going to look to go to 3-0 in his career as he's going to take on Lorenzo Hunt. That is Michael Lombardo. He trains out of American Top Team in Coconut Creek, Florida. Michael, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I had the opportunity to be at your last fight earlier this year, which was in the RFC here in my hometown of Tampa, Florida. And the best way I would describe that is it was a dog fight. Is that the way you would describe that fight?
Yeah, definitely, man. That was that dog fight is definitely what it was, man. That was just a tough back and forth fight, and it was a grind. But I think I grew a lot from that fight, so I'm ready to get going again.
What did you learn about yourself from that fight? They always talk about when you have those, you know, those grinding, you know, tough fights. You learn something that about yourself that you didn't know before. Was there something that you found out about yourself in that matchup?
Yeah, definitely, man. Just that I can push myself. You know, I mean, I was in some tough situations in that fight, and I mean, I train at American Top Team, so I mean, I'm in those situations all the time. But it's a little different when, you know, it's an actual fight. So it was just the first time I've had like a tough back and forth fight, and I made it through and got the win. So it was a good experience.
Were you nervous at all when the judges' scores were being read?
Honestly, man, I don't know. I wasn't thinking like I won or lost. I was just kind of feeling like it was a tough fight. I wasn't really sure, but after I went back and watched the fight, I think I clearly won all three rounds, but it was a close fight either way, you know?
I remember I was sitting there with my buddy as we were watching the fights, and I was like, I mean, but both you guys, I mean, were throwing everything you had in the kitchen sink. And it was there a point in that fight where you just realized like, look, I'm not gonna be able to knock this guy out?
Oh man, honestly, no. I was trying to finish him the whole time, but that guy was very tough, man. He was really, really a good fighter, and I have a lot of respect for him.
So when you have that kind of battle, did you take some additional time off, or did you get right back into the gym on Monday?
No, I took about a week off, rested up. I mean, I had to heal up a little bit. I was a little banged up, but after about a week, I got back to the gym and got back to it. I was supposed to fight 6 weeks later, and that fight ended up getting scratched. So, but then took another week, a little bit slower, jumped right back in, and now I'm getting ready to fight Hunt on the 19th.
I've got to imagine this makes life a little easier fighting down, you know, fairly close to the American Top Team headquarters. How is fight week different for you when you're, you know, fighting there in South Florida as opposed to, say, fighting in Tampa like you did in February?
Right. Honestly, man, it's not really much different. I mean, I'm just going to prepare basically the same way, you know, and just be ready to fight. I mean, just I don't have to drive 3 hours, so that's nice.
It's always, I think that's one of the untold stories I think a lot of fans really don't know is when you're fighting on these local shows, a lot of times you're actually driving up on day of the weigh-ins.
Right, yeah, that's exactly what we did. We drove up to Tampa on the day of the weigh-ins, and our car broke down on the side of the road. So we were fixing our car for about an hour. So we ended up being late to the weigh-ins and I got fined and everything. So hopefully this time, you know, that won't happen.
So now in terms of that, did you do your weight cut down, you know, in South Florida and then you got into the car to drive up to Tampa?
Yeah. I don't cut a ton of weight, so it's not really too big of a problem for me, you know, but I cut it before. I was like maybe 186 when I left, and then I got there, no problem, you know.
And now here at Titan FC 44, the opponent is Lorenzo Hunt. First off, give us your assessment of Lorenzo as an opponent.
I really don't know like a ton about him. I've seen him fight a little. I've seen like some fights a little bit. He looks like a tough guy, man. He always comes to fight, and that's good, man, because I'll be ready.
Is your just kind of mentality of like, look, the toughest part for me being a fighter is just walking into ATT on a daily basis because I'm not going to see anything much tougher than what you see on a day in, day out basis.
Listen, the honest truth is, yeah, training at ATT, you train with the best guys in the world every single day. And like, I mean, we're always going back and forth and there's wars in that gym always. So, I mean, it's always tough, but at the same time, man, I respect everybody from every gym, you know, and I know that there's tough guys everywhere. So I'm not not respecting this guy, you know. I have plenty of respect for him and I'm sure that he has tough guys at his gym as well, you know.
And this will be a fight that, as I mentioned, fans can watch on UFC Fight Pass. A lot of fans who may be tuning in that have never, you know, seen you fight or see you compete, what would you want them to know about you?
Just that I come ready to fight. I come ready to try to finish the guy every time, you know. I mean, I'm trying to get in and out as fast as possible, but if it goes 3 fives, I'll be ready for that as well.
Mentioning about wanting to get in there, in and out as quick as possible, which, of course, that's what everyone wants to do. In terms of key to victories, not just generally speaking, not just with this fight, but how does patience work into your keys to victory?
Patience?
Yeah.
Man, on the last fight, I didn't have any patience. So this fight, you know, I'm going to try. I mean, I'm always trying to grow, but I think you do have to be patient, but also you have to be ready to, like, go take the finish when the finish is there. You know, it's just like you got to find that median. Like, you don't want to over push it, but when it's there, you got to go and get it.
How do you know when you know the finish is there for the taking?
Man, it's just like a feel thing. You know, that's something I don't know if you really like talk about it. Like, it's just something you feel when you're in there, you know?
But is there also that point of kind of knowing like, you know, look, I can't be reckless here. Because I think that's what a lot of guys talk about is you can't be reckless. I mean, what's the difference between being reckless and aggressive?
Oh, there's a big difference. I mean, being reckless, just going out there swinging crazy and just like throwing bombs and not like seeing. I mean, you want to be like under control, like a controlled aggression, we call it, you know, just being under control, but being aggressive, looking for the finish. But man, being technical and doing it the right way, you know, not throwing like crazy shots, crazy everything. I mean, just got to be under control, but aggressive at the same time.
So when you're not inside the training room, what do you like to do for fun?
Oh man, honestly, I don't really do much. I just train and then I rest, train and rest, train and rest. That's it.
In terms of resting your body, I mean, I know you want to try to get as many training sessions as you possibly can, but does there come a point in the week where you realize like, look, I've got to take a day off?
Usually I like to take a day off, like at the end of the week, maybe on like a Sunday, I like to take like have a rest day. Cause I mean, man, we're going like 6 days hard, you know, grappling, striking, strength and conditioning, everything. And then, you know, Sunday I like to rest, recover and get ready to go back on Monday.
So it's basically a Sunday fun day for you.
Yeah. If you call it that, Sunday fun day, but I mean, Sunday fun day is just resting and like eating some good food and that's it.
Looking at your Tapology page has you from Jupiter, Florida. So are there people you grew up with in Jupiter that are surprised you're a fighter?
Not really. I mean, I grew up an athlete. You know, I played college football and everything. And I was always like, you know, always into like the physical sports and everything. So, I mean, I don't know if anybody's surprised, you know.
In terms of, and I've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of guys who've made that transition from the gridiron into mixed martial arts. What do you think is the biggest trait that you brought from football into MMA?
You know what? I just think athleticism and hard work, you know, just always like, you know, always trying to be the first to gym, last to leave, you know, and just having like good athleticism. I think that strength and stuff, I think that's all that's helped me a lot.
Do you miss playing football?
No. I don't miss it at all. I mean, I miss like my friends and stuff like that. But hey, you know, time is done, and this is what's now.
Was it a natural transition, football to MMA, or did it kind of take some time?
No. It wasn't natural. I mean, like, I was always like strong and athletic, and that helped me. But like, you know, learning the jiu-jitsu and stuff like that—that's not really natural. I don't think for anybody, man. Like, you're going against like high level guys, and you don't really know like what submission is coming. That's tough.
You know what? You know, they always talk about you've got to learn how to take a punch. Was that something that you learned pretty quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, they say you learn how to take a punch. I mean, you don't want to really get punched too much. You want to, like, roll with the punch, this and that. So, I mean, it takes time. Man, it all takes time. It's not something that just, like, comes, like, the next day, you know? I mean, I've been at this hard, like, every day, day in and day out for about 4 years now. So, I mean, it's taken a while, but, you know, I'm feeling ready to go. I'm feeling good.
As we're talking, we're just a little under 2 weeks to go before this fight's going to take place. So, what's the next 10 days like for you?
Next 10 days, man, I'm gonna finish up this week hard, training, you know, every single day, two or three times a day, and then Saturday will be my last day of training, and then Sunday, Monday, take a little rest and just preparing for the fight next Friday.
And of course, this will be Titan FC 44 coming up Friday night, May 19th. Of course, you can watch it on UFC Fight Pass as Michael's gonna take on Lorenzo Hunt. Michael, I appreciate time. Anywhere my listeners can follow you out on social media?
All right, thank you, man. Yeah, I'm on Instagram, MV Lombardo 561, and that's it, man.
Michael, I appreciate the time. Good luck on Friday night at Titan FC 44. And if you're not in the South Florida area, you can watch that event on UFCFightPass.com. A lot of MMA options on Friday night. Titan is one of those options. Of course, your other options, a tape delay Bellator show. Also, you have LFA 12 on Access TV. So a lot of options. But for me as a fight fan, what has me the most interested in that fight card is the main event, co-main event. I'm very interested to see how Michael does. An undefeated middleweight, you know, middleweight is one those division that you're always trying to find that up-and-coming talent. But really, for me, it is that main event and co-main event. Farkhof Sharipov defending the bantamweight title against the flyweight champion Jose Shorty Torres. And then the co-main event, which is for the interim title, Jay-Z Cavalcante versus Kurt Hollebutt. We'll see Freddy Asansal win. Will he ultimately have a unification bout against the winner of that matchup? Of course, when I talked to Jay-Z a little while ago and Kurt, they were kind of, they didn't kind of know what the status of Freddy Asansal was. But a nice matchup there on Friday night, Titan FC 44. So I'll definitely have my eyes tuned in to see what happens there, what happens at LFA as well. Now, I want to leave you with one final note here before I get out of here on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, and that is about television ratings. The television ratings for UFC 211 on FX have come in. The two-hour preliminary card averaged 1.148 million viewers. Now, this was up 46% over last May's pay-per-view preliminary card on FS1, which was 786,000 viewers. Among the adult demographic 18 to 49, which is a key demographic for any MMA promotion or really any sports promotion, in 18 to 49 was up 61% in comparison to last May's pay-per-view preliminary card. Also, the prelims were also up over FX's 8 to 10 p.m. time period average on the same Saturday last May in both viewership and adult 18 to 49. It was up 14% in viewership and up 85% in that adult 18 to 49 demographic. And the preliminary card did peak during the final fight there between Dustin Poirier and Eddie Alvarez, peaking at 1.360 million viewers. And should note that the pre-fight show, which was on FX, came in with 522,000 viewers. This ranks as the 10th most watched pre-fight show since Fox Sports acquired the rights to the UFC. And the post-fight show, which aired on FS1 following the pay-per-view, came in with 329,000 viewers. So solid numbers there for the UFC this past Saturday night. Of course, the next UFC event is coming up on Sunday afternoon, May the 28th. Fight card there from Stockholm, Sweden. Going to be headlined by Alexander Gustafsson and Glover Teixeira. Big matchup there at 205 pounds. A co-main event is also a big light heavyweight matchup as that is going to be Misha Cirkunov with that new UFC contract taking on Volkan Ozdemir. So a big matchup there at 205 pounds. And, of course, a lot of people are pointing at Misha Cirkunov as potentially, you know, that new line of challenger at 205 pounds. You know, we've been kind of stuck in this this hold where it's been Cormier, Jones, Gustafsson, and Rumble. And, of course, the UFC trying to find that new talent there at 205 pounds and maybe – just maybe it is Misha Cirkunov. And I'll say that upcoming UFC Fight Night card from Stockholm, a little bit of a sneaky card. It's got some nice little matchups on that. So looking forward to watching that event on Sunday, May the 28th. That main card starts at 1 p.m. Eastern time, 10 a.m. out on the West Coast. And the early prelims will start at 9:30 a.m. and 6:30 out on the West Coast on UFC Fight Pass. Kind of interesting. Marcin Held is actually the first fight of the night on that fight card. So interested to see kind of how well he does there. But for me, those top two fights are really what is drawing me to the television set on Sunday afternoon, May the 28th. Of course, that is Memorial Day weekend. But that is really looking forward to that fight card. Also, one other thing I want to mention before I get out of here. If you head over to the MMAreport.com right now, you can see a couple of interviews that I have done via video. I talked to Tanner Boser about his ACB 61 fight coming up on Saturday night. Also, he talked about how much he is being paid there by ACB. Also, talked to Corey Gower, who's going to be fighting at Havoc FC 12 on June the 3rd. Interesting story about what, you know, he is a Canadian and he talked about why he is doing his camp over there in Hawaii. So you definitely want to check out the interview I did. Also, I talked to Jalen Turner, who's coming off that 36-second win in Bellator back in January. He's fighting on Thursday of this week at Tachi Palace 31. So I had a chance to catch up with him as well. Also, I have an interview up there with Chase Walden, who fights on Friday night at LFA 12. He's going to be taking on Cully Butterfield. He talked to me about why he likes that matchup. And actually, this is a matchup he has been wanting for some time. So head over to the MMAreport.com. You can check out those interviews. Also, I got an interview with Jamie Pickett, who's going to be on fighting on Friday over in Russia at Fight Nights Global 65. He's taking on a UFC vet on that fight card. So a lot of content over there at the MMAreport.com. Of course, if you're not already following me on Twitter, do that at Jason_Floyd. I appreciate everyone that listens to this podcast each and every week. Also, be sure to like the MMA Report on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMMAReport. Also on Twitter, @TheMMAReport. Also, be sure to check out the other programs here at RadioInfluence.com, from Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy, Flavor in Your Ear with Ian Beckles, Inside the Dugout, The Valor Hour, Dangerous Conversation, and Beyond the Badge, Crush Performance, just to name a few other shows that we have over there at RadioInfluence.com. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which comes out every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We have a group of guys that I ride with. And what we are is we're a bunch of jackass, like, weekend warriors that just kind of head out there. And so we go into this little bar in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. We walk in and there's like 40 Asian dudes. Asian and Mexican guys.
Did you go to a karaoke bar?
I know, exactly. And they all had cuts on. So... oh. I'm like standing there, and here literally is like me. I've got chaps and boots and jeans and like a North Face.
Yeah.
You know, cause I'm fucking white suburban dad. I don't have a leather jacket on. I've got a fucking North Face. My buddy next to me is in full leathers, like white leathers.
It's like a fucking Power Ranger.
Literally. Yeah. Like a Power Ranger. And one of the other guys that was with us was dressed similar to me. He had an old school Yamaha, but he had an FOP jacket on because he was an ex-cop. So we walk into the bar and we sit down and the bartender says, "Are you guys here for the meeting?" And I kind of looked around at all the bikers and I said, "Nope, we're not here for the meeting." And she said, "Okay, you guys need to stay here. Do not go into the back room." And I'm like, no fucking problem, lady. About 5 minutes into them going into the meeting, the 6'5" guy comes walking out of the back room and just beelines it right for the fucking three guys sitting at the end of the bar, one of whom's wearing a fucking FOP jacket. He comes walking up and he sits down and he's like, now I already knew his name was Loctite because he had Loctite tattooed right here on his neck.
And, as you do.
So Loctite comes over and he sits down and has a conversation with us in a nice, like, very friendly conversation, you know, coming from a pagan. And finally, he's just like, so who the fuck are you guys? You guys cops? And we're like, no, I'm not. I'm a chef. My other buddy's like, I'm like a project manager. And my other buddy's like, I'm retired, dude. I'm a retired cop. Like, I'm just wearing the jacket. I'm no longer a cop. And we kind of go back and forth on this little banter. And he's like, what are you guys doing here? I'm like, we really do. We just stopped for lunch. Like, that was it. And just to give you a really quick kind of brief history, about 2 years prior to this, there was a massive ring of pagans and Amish who got arrested for this massive meth ring. Pagans and the Amish. They were cooking meth for, yeah, what were they cooking it on? They were cooking meth for the pagans, and then the pagans were selling it. And there was like this huge sting that went down in the western suburbs of Philadelphia with the pagans and the Amish getting arrested and going to jail at the same time. Yeah.
The pagans and the Amish. You couldn't make that shit up.
I know. So Loctite, nice meeting you guys. We shake hands. Here's me, like, Mr. fucking marketing guy. Here's my card, Loctite. If you ever need anything, give me a shout. Stop it and see me. Exactly. So Loctite, like, goes in the back, and I say to the bartender, I'm like, do me a favor, you buy Loctite a beer. She goes in the back. She comes back out. He's like, Loctite doesn't drink anymore, but he said, thank you very much for everything. Like, it was pretty fucked up, dude. It was like a weird little world. Long story, my buddy Mike Gannon is never allowed to wear the FOP jacket if we ride again.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.